Fabulous radio friends, and welcome to yet another of Sex Talk of WR Pittsburgh. After a long hiatus, we are back on air. With me in the studio tonight are two of the eminent members of Ultra Speak It. The Lambda Institute, which is an ultra secret think tank devoted to homosexual issues, and it's funded by, I believe, rock mogul David Geffen,
and I believe Arianna Huffington, the last from her unsuccessful bid for the California Senate. From the California Senate.
So, and your name's Dr. William Mysterio.
That's right. Yes.
And
it's a family name.
Michael Zeiling.
I'm Michael Zeiling.
And I am, of course, as always, I'm DJ Extra Crispy 5000. And tonight we're going to talk about...
Why do you make up names like that?
No one's going to believe that name.
That's my ridiculous name. That's my stage name. When you've been in the entertainment industry as long as I have, you realize that you have to keep your public and private life separate. Otherwise, there's lots of crazy people out there. And so... That is my nom de radio.
You did. You had that soccer problem.
Yes, I.
Funny boiler guy.
Exactly.
You resolved that, though, right? You started stalking him, and then that stopped it.
That's right. I understand. The best defense, the good offense.
I read that.
So, Doctors Mysterio and Xylene are going to talk about the latest breakthroughs in homosexual research.
Well, actually, heterosexual research.
That's interesting. So your institute has actually been tackling the heterosexual problem.
It's a big issue in the 90s, kind of a post-Reagan revolution, you know.
They're just coming out in greater and greater numbers. Something needs to be done about the problem. Mm-hmm. Study it.
Our view has never been one of, you know, against them per se. We try to maintain a sort of degree of intellectual detachment, but I want to go on the record saying we have nothing against that particular lifestyle.
I'm a little confused, frankly. I mean, is it not true, correct me if I'm wrong, statistically, that heterosexuality is the dominant sexual paradigm?
Well, they would have you believe that.
In this culture?
I mean, that's part of the rhetoric that, you know, that they, and the rhetoric too, I believe, both actually, that they have you, you know, but that's one of the things that we're working on. That figure's actually wrong.
So it's not, the widely quoted figure is...
groups like to inflate their figures.
Okay, so the widely quoted figure I've heard is that 90% of, you know, Americans are, quote, heterosexual, but if I may use that. And you're saying that's widely inaccurate.
I Dr. Zeilin, I believe, has done research just in this area. He's found that many purportedly heterosexual people, in fact, are not, heterosexual.
You know, it's just a matter of approach.
Contact.
Mm-hmm. See, I find this actually. I find that this comment that you make it makes a lot. It resonates within my very soul because
we've gotten a lot of resonance.
Myself, I
want to believe the resonance we've gotten.
I've recently gotten back into contact with an old college friend of mine who I was very attracted to. I was going through an experimental homosexual phase in college, and I was very attracted to him. But he was purportedly straight, and our interaction never went beyond. Being very affectionate and did not have a sexual component. It was just sort of hugging and spending the night together, but no actual sex, just like that. And recently he's expressed a strong interest in actually having an intimate encounter. So what would your research suggest is happening to a man like this? Is he becoming gay? Was he always gay? Or are those terms just too limiting? Is the actual...
This is a very common story. We hear this again and again, where, you know, the purportedly heterosexual individual, slowly but surely, you know, it becomes clear that they no longer want to live the lie that the sort of, you know, that this clique of really very small number of actual real heterosexuals out there have been...
these so-called militant heterosexuals. I mean, who are these people that are controlling the media and making our young people and our citizens believe that you have to be heterosexual in order to be acceptable in society? Is it the Christians?
It's very, we believe that it's sort of a coterie of people. They go to these same, you know, small, you know, conservative schools in the South, and they all kind of know each other, and they're, it's kind of one of those, you know, battle boy types of network. So it's
a lot of the same people that are involved in the showing that Clinton had sex.
And cigarettes too. They're involved in cigarettes also.
Yeah, I think that there's some link between heterosexuality and tobacco. And I've been going on doing a lot of field work in North Carolina to investigate.
Well, that's interesting because, in fact, the stereotype of gay men, of course, that they all smoke too, right? I mean, go to a club, Pittsburgh zone, I guess, you'll find that it's filled with cigarettes. So are these gay men in denial? Are they transitioning between?
I think it has a lot to do with transition because Pittsburgh's still a fairly primitive area in the United States. You know, if you go to a gay club in California, you know, see that for it.
I think a lot of that smoke is also pumped in from local heterosexual bars as well. If you actually look at the people, you know, in the club, none of them are actually smoking. So we're still trying to sort of figure out where that's all coming from, but it is kind of it's a little curious.
So,
you know,
so I think
it's not what you think.
Is there a spray you can get, sort of like the new car smell spray? Is there kind of like a cigarette smoke spray you can make to make your club smell more genuine?
Yeah, it actually is an extract from dog urine that they use all the time.
Interesting.
So, I thought it was cat urine. Is it dog urine?
Well, anyway, maybe you can do both.
I know. I don't want you to have this very sophisticated. I mean, I know both of you working at the Institute, I'm sure you have these kind of high-level discussions all the time, but I should point out, by the way, we're having severe technical difficulties here at the studio. It's a miracle we're on the air at all, but of course we persevere despite whatever difficulties we encounter. We
are the heterosexual sabotage.
It may well be.
We say all the time it's a miracle we're on the air, so we're used to that.
There's
no problem.
We are taking calls, 621-WRCT or 268-WRCT. That's country code 1, area code 412. But you will have to speak with our producer, and she will relay your questions to us. We don't have a direct catch at the moment because there's some sort of serious technical problem involving the technology in the control room. So please do call in or check our website, which is actually also broken right now, but check it tomorrow. http://loveline.wrct.com.
Or you could send a telegram, right? I think that still works.
That's right. Or messenger us, or come down to the studio. Actually, don't. So where were we? Oh, actually, earlier, I was actually reading your latest report, which I believe is still confidential. And I believe, so if I understand the way the Institute works, you develop some research, and you sell it to your industrial partners, and then release it to the general public years or even decades later.
That's right? Pretty much, yes.
But you did tell me you were doing some research on the homosexual activity of fisting, which I believe is uniquely or mostly homosexual. Is that right? I mean, there's nothing that prevents.
I don't know about that. I think Dr. Zeiling was discussing that earlier.
So the
actually, what we were discussing is there's this French guy, Michel Foucault.
Is that a woman, Michel Foucault?
No, it's
you would think, but no.
No,
this is the famous French philosopher Michel Foucault, right?
Yes. Some people cite it, and everyone, but
Foucault's Pendulum is a book,
right?
Written by
Umberto Eco, who's Italian.
So go figure. I mean, you know.
Okay, so I'm with you.
And so Foucault speculated that this thing was the unformed sex pleasure. It was unique. It was uniquely invented. 20th century. But that was before phone sex.
Right, I think phone sex is definitely more. I don't buy this whole 20th century fisting hypothesis. I mean, I think, you know, clearly you had the necessary sort of anatomical setup, certainly in prehistory.
Well, that's what I was pointing out to Dr. Zeiling.
Yes,
in the movie Caligula, it may not be historically accurate, there is a fisting being involved. The Emperor Caligula says that one of his generals can marry someone only if he allows Caligula to fist something, right? And so, it's a strange kind of punishment. And then, you know, Caligula does this while wearing all of his ornate rings, actually ends up damaging and killing the person involved.
Yeah, that'll happen. So, I think certainly if you read the works of the Marquis de Sade or someone like that, I'm sure somewhere in all the other weird things he writes about that he slipped that in. So the idea that it's 20th century, you know,
exactly.
Michel,
Foucault,
you know,
he did investigate pretty well. Foucault did in fact read Foucault and didn't know class to study classical sexuality. In fact, Foucault wrote a book on classical sexuality that's not apparently particularly well documented.
So the key question
is, didn't write about it? I can't believe that they didn't do it. I mean, if it was physically possible, you know, right. 1901,
I mean, the argument is that presumably anything that it was imaginably possible has probably been done. But so I would like to turn to answer the question to the greatest philosopher of the modern era, or of any era, in fact, which is, of course, Ayn Rand. What I know that Dr. Zeiling, you're also an expert in Ayn Rand and objectivism,
mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, is there a fisting scene in any of Ayn Rand's work, The Fountainhead, for example?
As a matter of fact, I think there is a scene where Howard Roark, this is, sorry, I'm having trouble with the word, this, John Galt, you know, it's actually not in one of the two major books, it's actually a little short story by.
I think they cut that out of the movie, though, didn't they?
Yeah.
So this is kind of like, there's some kind of Ayn Rand apocrypha, if you will, of stories that didn't quite make into the usual objectivist canon, or...
Well, she wrote a lot of stuff that didn't get into the two holy books, you know. And so this is part of the apocrypha. I think it's something about they do it for money.
Oh, I see.
It's so a short story, and...
So, but those characters were, of course, set in the 20th century. So she's not arguing any kind of pre.
As far as I know, Ayn Rand never argued for pre 20th century fisting.
I think the phone sex is actually a much better example of something that I think clearly is you know, a modern well, that cyber sex too.
Kind of a weird argument, right? I mean, is there anything fundamental? I mean, clearly, you know, phones and so on are a recent invention, but in the old days, could you imagine people doing the analogous thing, like
letters,
Pony Express sex? I mean,
right, or you know, talking, or just. In the old days, you would have phone sex, but in the same room. I mean, so what is the essential element of phone sex? Is it the anonymity?
I think you gotta have a phone. You know, hence the term phone, and then you've gotta have some sex in there.
Dr. Mysterio, stretch your mind here a little bit.
Maybe Native Americans, I think, were into smoke signal sex for a while.
Which gets back to the whole smoking issue in a kind of strange,
this is
oblique
like
way.
The show Connections.
Exactly. That's right. That's right. It was only the heterosexual Native Americans that did the smoke signal sex thing, of course.
Because the homosexual ones were too busy fisting.
That's right. I think there's some documentation to support that, in fact, somewhere. So, yes, that's true.
So, let me ask you this question. Why are homosexuals so bitter? I mean, surely you must have come across this fact.
I think that Dr. Mysterio gets asked this question very often. So
I think that the question I get asked is, why am I so bitter? So you're really kind of a different question, although perhaps related.
Well, Dr. Mysterio, are you yourself a homosexual, if I may use that term?
I think one might use that term.
All right. So you're both an academic and a homosexual, which is like...
I'm an academic homosexual. Well, I'm really more of a homosexual academic.
Yes. I mean, that would make you doubly or even exponentially more bitter.
Bitter. There's a synergistic effect between the homosexuality and the academia. You know, it's like taking Valium and alcohol. The two potentiate each other, and you reach heights of bitterness that are, you know, E to the something, you know.
Mathematically speaking, yes. So I'm actually only a graduate student, so at this point, I'm
well. That's okay.
Tasting
these things happen. Yeah, but bitterness, yes, it is an issue. Why are they so bitter?
Yeah, I mean, you'd think
an interesting question. You know, well, perhaps if you're, you know, actually 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 or 90% of the population, and there's this sort of cabal, this coterie, this cliche, this clique, if you will, of individuals trying to downplay to pretend as though that is not in fact the actual number, a certain amount of bitterness is inevitable, don't you think?
I guess I sort of agree. I mean, I think on one hand, homosexuals have it made, right? You know, that they have a lot of sex, they're more attractive than heterosexuals.
They certainly have better houses, nicer neighborhoods.
Right. They know
better groomed, you know, pets.
They know how to dance. They have
better dressed. Well, so I think that there's a lot of reason for heterosexual bitterness, I think, which may, you know, explain a lot of this sort of, you know, conspiracy to distort reality that we do see. So I think that certainly is understandable, you know.
Are we all really bisexual? I mean, does your research point to...
No, we are we are all not really bisexual, no. But, you know, it's an interesting thought, but no.
There's still a worm or something that's bisexual, isn't there? They try to stab each other with their penises.
That's right. There is a worm. You know, this is actually true. There's a worm that lives off of the... everything we've been saying is true, of course, but this is particularly true. There's a worm. It's some kind of flatworm that lives off the coast of some little Australian shoal somewhere. And this was in a recent Scientific American. You can actually see a picture of it. And they are both male and female, and they have these actual...
Each individual worm
is both a penis, if I may use the word, and a... I'm not sure if it's a vagina, but it's something sort of complementary. It's a worm version of that. And they actually have penis duels.
No.
This is true. And they actually do have... There's a picture in Scientific American. I mean, you know, the things you learn. And they have penis duels, and the goal of the penis duel is to... penetrate the other worm with your penis and at the same time avoid being penetrated by the other worm.
It's like a computer science game of Core War. but related.
That's where the idea came from.
So I'm actually fascinated by this.
So the loser, the loser of the war actually is the one that gets inseminated, and the loss is that you have to basically bear the kids instead of just have your genetic material rather cheaply spread by being the inseminator. So from an evolutionary point of view, spreading your genes and having someone else have to do the actual gestating is, you know,
I think that's
trivial. But of course, actually having to bear the child is a great deal more sort of intake of resources. You've got to sort of sit around.
This is like an Ursula Le Guin novel.
Maybe she, you know, invented the things. I don't know. But, wow. Yeah, so the idea is not to not to lose, not to get speared before you spear the other one. It's
does this have a counterpart in gay sex all the time, do you think?
Is this from my personal experience you're asking this question, or just from our research?
From our research.
I wouldn't know. But, you know, there's no reproductive sort of issue there, which is how... I think the problem is that, you know, from our research, it's actually the loser is the other one, you know, so it's a little bit different. But, you know, there may be some analogies.
For people who might not understand this, because within, you know, the male body, there is this thing called the prostate.
The prostate. And this is a gland that lives somewhere inside your body, and it's stimulated
near the
anal opening.
Near the anal opening.
Or aperture, if you will.
In fact, this is the what inspires, you know, men to be homosexual, because it's
really?
Such a source of pleasure. And in fact, this is why we actually speculate that 100% of men are in fact homosexual.
Well,
because they have...
The reason I disagree with that is my own personal... In my own limited forays into the homosexual lifestyle, and I have been somewhat experimental in that area.
I've read several of your papers, and, you know... I don't understand why they didn't pass peer review, but that's just me.
I was much more interested as a youngster in some kind of male contact without wanting anal intercourse. Anal intercourse seemed unhygienic and uninteresting to me. It was only later, as I became more sophisticated, that I began to realize that anal intercourse could be pleasurable.
Well, you probably didn't like caviar as a child either, but...
Right, so indeed, but the craving for anal intercourse is not what made me gay, because that craving did not exist. I didn't know it would feel good.
So I think that's really the problem is how the heterosexist cabal has suppressed this knowledge. I think this is their most insidious trick.
It may have not led you in your own personal journeys to... the sort of promised land of homosexuality, but you would be surprised at how many people in our research have in fact indicated that it was that actual act which led them, and many people who are in active heterosexual relationships find that it is in fact that leads them to homosexuality, because of course that's one particular act that they are not very easily able to implement.
But also women, for example, lots of heterosexual couples have anal intercourse, or the woman is the receptive partner. She lacks a prostate, obviously, it's a male gland. What does she get out of it?
I prefer not to think about that, personally.
So, you prefer not to think about women? I mean, are you imagining some kind of... who is that? Who wrote The Handmaid's Tale? Some sort of futuristic society where there are
Margaret Atwood.
Margaret Atwood,
where there are no women? Some sort of inverse Margaret Atwood universe?
No, there were women. There were women and men. But everyone was sterile, I think. Was what happened.
I'm thinking of some other book where there were no more men.
There were no men.
Anyway, it hardly matters. But so, for example, I know women who have wanted to experience penetration simultaneously, if you will. If you will.
Well, I won't, but...
But anyway.
I'm sure someone will.
So obviously your research doesn't really cover that area. I'm going to interrupt this powerfully intriguing conversation to do a brief public service announcement. Do you want to have the best relationship possible with your preteen daughter and guide her to healthy teenage years? Do you hope that she's prepared for new relationships in her teen years and that she develops self-confidence and assertiveness? Consider a mother-daughter group at Parent and Child Guidance Center this summer. Or enroll your preteen daughter in a group entitled Go Girls, in which she'll learn communication skills and grow in self-esteem. Call 343-5698. That number again is 343-5698. All right, so back to the show. So in your research, how do you perform this research? Like, do you go to do you interview homosexual, self-proclaimed homosexuals in the street? Do you interview heterosexuals who are suppressing their homosexuality? I mean, what is your research base?
We do a lot of door-to-door interviews of heterosexuals, yes. We tell them we're the Census Bureau. We find that that's more effective.
So that gives you sort of a leg in, as it were?
As it were, yes. What we look for sort of cues. We look for, you know, children's toys or sort of those little depressing plastic swimming pools that never actually have any water in them in the backyard, and swing sets, things like that. That kind of tells us that that's one place where we want to go. And, you know, we go, we have our little survey, we interview them, and then we go and we sort of correlate all this information and send a report back to David every now and then. He likes to see what we're up to.
Okay.
Right. And Ariana, too, although I think she's really more in it just for the sort of glamour value.
So Ariana, this woman, Ariana Huffman, what's her name?
Huffington. Yes.
She was... She ran for governor of California or something?
Well, technically it was her husband that ran, but you know how those things go. It was actually the most expensive senatorial election. It was the most expensive election ever, except for a presidential election.
So her expense in North Carolina? I guess
it was at the time the most expensive one ever. I don't know if it's since been beaten. She was running against, well, technically he was running against Dianne Feinstein in 92, I guess it was. 92, 94, they each spent roughly $20 million, and it was in very, very close, and hotly contested. I would say hotly, wouldn't you, Dr. X?
It was very hot.
It was hot, and contested. It was. He claimed that she had some fake votes from illegal immigrants from Oregon or Canada or someplace.
Armenia,
I forget. Someplace. I forget the exact. And she claimed he had illegal votes, but as we both know, of course, Dianne did. In fact, win that election, and Michael is since, what is he doing these days? I think he's selling real estate or something somewhere. Anyway, he lost most of his fortune.
Then Michael and Ariana
split up.
Yeah.
They are no longer together. And Ariana is now doing the talk show circuit. She's a regular on Politically Incorrect.
I think really? She may be becoming a lesbian, too.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, by your argument, that's the natural end state of adult development.
It's very similar to the sort of progression from capitalism to socialism to communism that Marx always predicted, except, you know, of course, we haven't had our wall fall yet, but, you know, we're looking forward.
I think of it as the a butterfly, you know, pupa stage turning into, you know, a real butterfly. I think this is the better analogy.
Yes, it's the butterfly analogy, we call that.
The butterfly.
In our work.
I read that as the butterfly paradigm.
It's also known as the butterfly paradigm, butterfly analogy, butterfly paradigm. It's all.
So Dr. Zeilin, I understand that you have, not only is this, of course, your life's work, but you you also have personal, you have some personal experiences actually transforming heterosexual men into homosexual men.
He is sort of the Franz Kafka metamorphosis of this work. He has done more to turn little beetle men into strong, strapping homosexual hulks than really anyone else at the Institute, except perhaps for Ariana herself. But that's, you know, I think that's for another show. But please, Dr. Zeilin, tell us some of your touching conversion stories.
Well, a lot of times, you know, I go shower here at the CMU because our Institute is right next door. Just across the street.
The Institute's actually in the gym, but anyway. It's a small, sort of overly heated room.
And, you know...
is there towel service?
There's Dr. X is there.
And so, you know, I go to... Oh, do we have a question? Oh, let's hear the question from the caller and get back to this.
Well... We can't have too much data. I will sing a little song while our producer, just so you know, producer Kate has just entered the room. She's installing herself. Welcome to the show, producer Kate.
Hopefully this is going over cleanly. I'm not really sure, but you had a caller named Laura who wanted to address a topic which you talked about earlier when you were asking, what do women get out of anal sex? Among other things, that it does stimulate the G-spot. And
really?
Apparently.
The G-spot.
The G-spot. Hmm. That would be very high up in the
Have we done any research into the G-
What's the G-spot?
I don't... Hmm.
See, the thing is... Hmm. Oh, and what...
No, Laura it's okay. Can you continue?
Does Laura have more comments?
Yes.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, the thing that disturbs me about your institute is that I think it's rather male-oriented.
Well, that was Ariana's doing. You'll have to bring that up with her.
Well, yeah. And indeed, I mean,
this is our source of funding.
You know? But this is the way academia is. You get money from a certain source, you kind of, they control the purse strings.
In order to be intellectually honest, you need to inform your research by both halves of the population. You can't limit yourself to the male experience. I think that's a little bit...
Well, that's one reason we'd like to hear more about this. I'm sorry, what spot was that again?
The G spot.
G. Could we write that down?
You also made a generalization that homosexuals are better dressed and better dancers, but that may only apply to male homosexuals.
Oh, an interesting point.
Interesting.
An interesting point.
Her other issue, or the other point she wanted to bring up, was that men interested in having anal penetration in heterosexual relationships do have options, which is true. I second that motion.
With their female partners.
With their, yes.
Or the female partner could wear some kind of strap-on device.
Right, there's both sex toys and manual.
And now there's Viagra. If you give a woman 10 or 11 of those, you wouldn't need a strap-on, just, you know.
That's right.
So... good to go.
So, there are options.
Eventually, I'll know what you mean by that.
I will, too. And when I do, you'll be the first I'll call. You're taking notes, right, Dr. X? You can get back to all of this at some later date and sort it all out. Okay, that's good.
Neither WRCT nor the producers support any particular brand of erection-enhancing pharmaceutical.
I believe, actually, that is the only brand at this point that says...
It may well be. I would like to... If there are any kind of slightly corrupt doctors who would like to write me a prescription for Viagra, please do call in.
I didn't want to say anything. I was sorry about that, and we support you in your current... issue there.
Just to be clear, I'm perfectly capable of attaining an erection, especially if I'm thinking about computer science. But people are reporting that it's the effects are kind of fascinating, and
it's actually been responsible for 6 deaths in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not very much.
But you would be safe. I mean, a lot of the deaths are people taking nitroglycerin.
There's some kind of heart problems.
Heart problems, and then taking the Viagra.
Yeah, they weren't really clear on if it was the person taking it or their partner, but, you know, I'm assuming.
Okay, and so did caller Laura have any other commentary?
No, I believe that was it. Excellent. Can leave you too.
Excellent. Well, and I'd like to remind our listeners again, if you have any other commentary, 621-WRCT, 268-WRCT.
And we also welcome questions. I mean, that's what, you know, we produce, you know, thoughts, because we are a think tank.
Tech reports. We produce many tech reports. That's our main goal in life, is tech reports.
Do you ever publish any articles for the lay press, if you will, like the Newsweek or one of the more things that a common person might read?
Well, let me think about that.
It's not really been our focus.
We do have an upcoming article, though, in Soldier of Fortune, and... I believe, in fact, it is about this very topic of anal penetration. I don't remember the details of it.
But, I think it was a helpful how-to guide.
That strikes a bell, rings a chime. There's some kind. Yes, I think you're right. Yes, yeah. But that's we can't talk too much about that until it actually comes as copyright issues or something.
All right, I'm going to read another PSA right now because because these are very important. Come to a spectacular powwow celebrating the grand opening of Carnegie Museum of Natural History's new permanent Hall of American Indians, Saturday, June 6th and Sunday, June 7th, from noon to 6 p.m. Enjoy American Indian singing, drumming, dancing, food, art, and crafts, and explore one of the largest, most contemporary exhibits on Native Americans in the country. For details, call 412-622-3131. That's 622-3131. That sounds fascinating.
It does. And I understand that the smoke signal exhibit is particularly educational.
Now, you were claiming earlier that, I'm going to use the word primitive. I know that's kind of a loaded word in the vernacular, but a primitive culture like the American Indian, or, say, some of the third world countries.
Or North Carolina, for example.
Is homosexuality more prevalent in a place like that, more accepted? I mean, if indeed homosexuality is the natural state of humanity,
you would think it's
more prevalent perhaps, but less accepted. This is a societal paradox that we are investigating, wherein in fact the percentage of actual homosexual behaviors may increase in a inverse correlation with what is generally accepted to be the norm in that society. So you may in fact find that people are talking about one thing but doing another.
And this is certainly true in Latin America or Africa or places like that, where people are having all kinds of sex, but
sure,
but publicly same-sex interaction is sort of shunned.
Absolutely. Or New Jersey is an excellent example of that. I mean, certainly the northern parts.
Or, you know, or the Catholic
Church. Right around
Church.
Newark, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, the Catholic Church, that's another good example.
I understand that some of the medieval popes went to fisting.
Now, do you
I thought that there was no fisting before 1901.
Right,
now, if there was no fisting, that's an interesting point. Now, when we say there was no fisting until the 20th century, does that mean 1900, which is commonly but incorrectly believed, in fact, to be the beginning of the 20th century,
indeed.
But, you know, actually it would be 1901. I think this right. is, or so perhaps from 1900, you know, to 1901, there was just sort of partial experimental, not all the way
like
in.
Maybe like four fingers?
Four fingers, or maybe sort of a partial fist or something, or just a tiny dainty fist, that, you know.
So that's the question. If any of our listeners out there know the answer to this question, fin de siècle fisting, please call in 621-WRCT, 268-WRCT. We would like to know the answer.
Well, actually, well, we begin to see Ekla fisting, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, 1900 is the tale of the previous.
Oh, well, good point. Good point.
I think that more Foucault's point, by the way, is that the 20th century is the first century in which organizations devoted to fisting as a form of sexual pleasure actually held bake sales, which, you know, hasn't happened in centuries before.
So, okay, look.
Bake sales?
So they
held bake sales?
Mm-hmm. I'm as liberal as the next
one. What were they selling? I mean,
cupcakes shaped like...
I can imagine.
Dr. Xylene, Dr. Mysterio, please, a moment of your time. I'm as liberal as the next guy. Perhaps a little more, a little less. But...
I think that would be safe. I think that's safe to say.
But I find the idea of this sexual act you're referring to, fisting, repulsive. Both, you know, it's physically, you know, stretching that aperture, if you will, beyond its sort of ordinary limits. And,
it's the creation of a new form of pleasure, though. This is what makes it such a deeply spiritual exercise.
I'm actually more disturbed by the bake sales. I never heard what's up with these bake sales for fisting. What do they do with the money? And who's buying these baked goods? Would you really want to buy them? I mean, what's going on here? What are they holding in the courtyard of the elementary school? You know, the YMCA, Y Indian Guides, and the, you know, local fisting club are holding a bake sale? I've never heard of this.
So back to my question.
I'm sorry. The bake sale thing has thrown me for a loop.
It's kind of an on point here.
I apologize, but the bake sale, it's too, yeah.
What was my question? Fisting. It's difficult. It stretches that aperture to a point where it does not return to its normal kind of.
Is that true?
Completely firm state. I believe that people that are fist regularly have some problems with incontinence.
Regularly. Well, that may be.
Regularly what?
You said regularly.
Well, people, maybe even, I mean, I don't know. Am I prudish? Have I finally discovered my own limits of tolerance?
That's possible.
I can't really imagine why, you know, it would not go back to where it was originally, because I mean it's just a muscle and it knows like how to get tight.
Right, but the certainly there are physiological limits to every part of your body. Things that stretch so far may not return to their normal crispy condition. And also, I should point out that this is not something that should be tried by amateurs. A little public service warning: fisting is a.
Nope. Get information about it. Go to a few bake sales before you actually, you know, go to try it.
The bake sales before, they were, like, had to, you know, come up with like good little pamphlets explaining it.
Right, exactly. The interior intestine has the consistency of wet paper towel.
That's exactly right. This is
somewhat delicate.
This is,
so yes, you don't want to you don't want to be trying this at home unless you're a seasoned professional.
No.
So my next question is, I forgot my next question. talk among yourselves.
It was the question about homosexuality amnesia, I believe. Is there a correlation between the two? Fisting and amnesia, that's right. Does regular fisting cause amnesic episodes? Yes. Quite often we found we don't quite understand the connection between the nerves in that area or aperture and the part of the brain responsible for long-term memory storage. But
so, for example, my college friend, for example, was during one of his pornographic emails he was sending me was recently...
You never said they were pornographic.
Well, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But in this discussion about various thoughts he was having about me and so on, he also brought up the fact that he discovered the sensitivity of his own anal aperture recently.
I see.
And he found that very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. Now, how did he discover this? What happened?
Apparently some female...
Riding a motorcycle or something?
Some female that he was in a state of copulation with sent a probing little... sent some kind of probe in that direction.
Are you sure this isn't an episode of
Star Trek Voyager?
Or something
it was a
your message from him got crossed with. Captain Janeway sent out some kind of... Photorp casing
to the planet Uranus.
Exactly, some kind of Borg nanoprobe made its way up his alimentary canal and lodged there, or something. Or his prostate. Okay, so he was in a state of copulatoriness, and then
I think there could be some real use of this technology, though, when it comes to the prostate.
I think that the applications of sort of nanotechnology to prostate simulation.
Well, in fact, more generally, the fact that the Borg have this ability to instantly adapt to any new environment or any new threat, I think would be great for sexual activity. I mean, mm-hmm. if, for example, you wanted your partner to have an extra penis or some other kind of probe, they could just grow one.
Or an extra aperture.
Or an extra aperture, right, indeed.
And make fisting a much easier, too.
Exactly. You could fist with no possibility of...
So his girlfriend sent a probe up there.
and he realized that he liked it.
Is it still there, or did they lose telemetry on it, or people over at JPL are still analyzing the photos they got back? I mean, what was up?
It collected its samples and returned to the home.
That's better than they did with that Mars Mariner probe.
Mars, what was that? Mars
Mariner?
Surveyor,
was it Mariner? Surveyor? Something that they lost.
The Global Surveyor.
That probe just, they lost it.
Well, that can happen. It's very dangerous. You should actually be careful about the things that you insert in your rectum, because...
Or that you land on a distant planet, either one.
Because in either case, you could end up in the emergency room.
Exactly. So she probed him, and that's how he discovered that he was homosexual.
I don't know if he was just being coy or not. I mean, we all have...
Yeah, that sounds like a coy statement to me. I was having, and then she probed me. I mean, that was pretty...
I mean, because we all do have an anus, right? And so you're going to, at some point during your own masturbatory interactions, you're going to discover this aperture.
You're suggesting that perhaps he discovered this on his own without...
I don't know. I mean, I can't say for sure. On the other hand...
Perhaps it was a self-launched automated probe. there's no one on the ground. Right, exactly. Well, that's possible. Why didn't you? Can we get him in here? Can you get him on the horn?
He's remote right now, but actually I'm going to go visit in a couple of weeks. I'm going on a WRCT sponsored research trip.
Maybe you can bring back some more telemetry.
I'll bring back some information.
Yes.
On that, exactly. So
did you remember your question?
No, I'm still trying to work on that, but you keep bothering me.
I apologize.
Just be quiet for a while, though, I think.
We have a research seminar we're preparing for. We could work on that if you'd like for a couple of minutes there.
Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a TV show called Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
We're all very familiar with it. Ellen DeGeneres. Groundbreaking television. The first lead character of a sitcom who was actually gay. Whose character was gay. The show was canceled, as we all know. What is your reaction? Good for society, bad for society.
It's just an example of how the heterosexist cabal and the tobacco companies are trying to destroy the happiness of American youth.
Do you think ABC deliberately suppressed Ellen because it was threatening the dominant homosexual paradigm? Excuse me, the dominant heterosexual paradigm?
Yeah, well, you see, I mean, it's very easy to get confused. It's our point, exactly. Especially, you know, if you have amnesic episodes mixed in there.
I do. I'm all a fluster. So
we all are. And Ellen's being canceled. It's yeah.
So I actually now remember my question.
Oh, okay.
So
I've actually never seen Ellen, by the way.
You've never seen Ellen?
I've never seen Ellen.
Well, that's.
It's set in a coffee shop or a newsroom or something.
Ellen used to own a bookstore. Uh-huh. Used to be set in the bookstore. I believe they changed that in later episodes. Ellen came out and had a girlfriend, and the show stopped being funny. Became kind of a drag, actually.
Yeah, anything after 1975 just didn't happen for me.
So after MASH was canceled, that was
where things stopped right there. Yep.
So this kid, Kip Kiplinger, or whatever the heck his name is, the Oregon shooter boy. We've had a rash of high school shootings, as you well know. There's an epidemic.
Some of them are like junior high.
Yeah, pardon me. So youth, school, teen, preteen violence. Could this possibly be related to the fact that these teens are not able to comfortably express their homosexuality in their schools? I mean, we know in this case of Kevin Lucatus, for example, this kid specifically, I mean, he was having a romance with a man on the internet. And this is, in case you're not familiar with the Lucatus case, this is this kid who met this guy on the internet, was meeting him for secret sexual interactions, and his parents found out, or his counselor, he told a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist had to report it. The police got involved. They got Kevin they convinced Kevin somehow to do a sting against this pedophile guy. He was so freaked out by that he ended up raping and killing some neighbor kid who came by to sell candy. You're not aware of this story?
Oh, I heard about that part. I didn't hear the whole story, no.
Right, so the whole story is very tragic, and this is clearly a case where this kid is probably mentally disturbed anyway, but...
Well, what did they do with him?
Oh, he's awaiting trial right now, I think. But in general, so in that case in particular, there's a strong homosexual element. I mean, if he had been more free to express his sexuality, perhaps he wouldn't have had quite as much bundled-up aggression and rage, and there's lots of other teens shooting up schools too. What's the connection?
You know, it's funny, you're the second person that mentioned Kip to me today. Someone else mentioned him to me. They thought his picture looked very cute. They wondered what that said about themselves.
Actually disturbing, because I think a lot of serial killers are actually very attractive. I mean, Timothy McVeigh, for example, is a very attractive man.
He was attracted to Timothy too.
The Oklahoma City bombing characters.
He wasn't really a serial killer.
There's another trouble.
Got it all done at one
serial,
time.
Serial, right? Serial. It was more a parallel.
Parallel. I think it's kind of a postmodern efficiency thing there.
There's another very related problem to a lot of these serial killers.
Jeffrey Dahmer's very attractive, actually. Also,
yeah, being very attractive. A lot of Republicans from the state of Oklahoma that are elected, like Steve LaRoggiant and Inhofe, Senator Inhofe of Oklahoma.
Andrew, what's his name?
Cunahan.
Stephen LaRoggiant is one of them.
Yeah.
Inhofe? Senator Inhofe, yeah.
Are these men like Samoan or something? Where do they get these names?
I think some of them might be partly American Indian, because Oklahoma is like a third.
Really?
American, yeah.
All right.
And, you know, these people are real Nazis. I mean, really lunatic Nazis. And you know they have nice asses, and you know it's very hard to put these two facts together.
Fascism really does attract very sexually attractive men, especially in the buttock region. Our research has shown this time and again. We don't know why. It's one of those mysteries up there with quantum indeterminacy and the special sauce. We're still trying to work on it.
I'd know how to respond to that if I knew why you brought that up. The Oklahoma politics.
That there's a variety of people that are real freaks.
You know who's also attractive is the leader of the ex-leader of the Christian Coalition. What's that guy's name?
Ralph Reed.
Ralph Reed. I find Ralph Reed very.
The
attractive.
Son. There's a it's a father-son duo, isn't it?
Really.
I think it's the son that's attractive.
And they're both. That's interesting.
Yeah, they're kooky.
That's it. I mean, I think, you know,
kooky fun. They're is that kind of like 70s lingo?
Yeah, they are. It's but no, kooky bad kooky.
So, you're about to say that they're.
Well, I just think, you know, serial killer, fascist republic is, you know, they're not. No, it's not some, like getting too.
It's just a continuum.
Yeah.
So, anyway. We have about 5 minutes left, and I would like to use those 5 minutes to talk about what message would you and the Institute like to bring to the American people via this program.
We just, for one thing, like people to be a little bit less fearful of heterosexuality, a little bit more understanding, a little bit more compassionate to those who are less fortunate, I think, than they are, and to just understand that part of this great, diverse experiment that is America means being accepting of even people who do like to engage in sexual acts that can only the most charitably be called, you know, disgusting and revolting, but still that's their choice, and that's okay as long as they don't do it out sort of where they can scare the horses. So that's really what the Institute's all about, is tolerance of this sort of lifestyle that's littered the planet with all of these screaming children and, you know, teenagers.
And I guess we also, you know, want to, you know, encourage people who have been, you know, sucked in to the heterosexual lifestyle,
as we like to call it.
But
there are alternatives.
There are all alternatives.
So there are some
that are more sort of congruent with nature and nature's intention. As the prostate, I think, clearly shows.
Yeah, the evolution.
Why would God have given us a prostate if he didn't mean for it to be used? I mean, it's so obvious.
Well, indeed. I mean, it's interesting. Anybody that has actually experienced anal penetration realizes how powerful and pleasurable those feelings are.
It's really more beyond sex. It's a spiritual experience that puts you sort of directly in touch with the very essence, core of sort of the God, you know?
That's, in fact, why we refer to the prostate as the God within man.
So your institute is not only primarily intellectual. You have a kind of a spiritual or religious.
We're very spiritual.
We have a spiritual sort of sect or annex. We're not, you know, that's not the primary aspect of our research. But, you know, there certainly is a thread of spirituality to all human experience. We would argue.
So going back to the philosophy, objectivism, which is the philosophy of Ayn Rand. Now, I noticed that Ayn Rand, in her work, she's actually very anti-homosexual, as far as I can tell. Is this what the key thing that makes her philosophy incomplete? Or and also, as a corollary, I've noticed that college students, who are the only people who take objectivism seriously, as far as I can tell, all the objectivist college students are also typically heterosexual.
Well, I think that we have to qualify that to some extent, that all these objectivist college students are, in fact, virgins, so we don't really know about their sexuality.
Oh, so that makes sense. So by the time somebody gets enough of a clue to actually become sexually active, they've already rejected objectivism.
Right. Our research has shown that 100% of the time.
Oh, that's interesting. So anybody who's an objectivist is actually probably pre-sexual in any operative sense.
That's correct.
That's extremely interesting.
I think Ayn Rand is basically a very infantile and hence pre-sexual philosopher.
So, but in her day, while she was still alive, I mean, she did have a very famous fling with her number one acolyte, Nathaniel Brandon.
Right, but that just involved mutual masturbation. There wasn't any penetration involved.
Interesting. Well, that fact about Ayn Rand is actually not well known.
No, and I mean, as Ford said, of course, it involved the wrong kind of orgasms, too. So, you know, clearly we're talking about sort of a, as Dr. Zeilin stated, what would be traditionally called a pre-sexual, immature outlook on sexual sex.
Wow, well that's incredibly interesting. So, who knew? So all of this talk about that Ayn spends about capitalism, talking about capitalism and the way social structures should be organized, is in fact a cover for the fact that she never
got any.
She never matured sexually as a person.
Yeah,
just the mutual thing.
Wow, that's interesting. So,
As a matter of fact, it's well known that, Carl was getting a lot, you know.
Karl
Marx.
Is that right?
Yeah, he had like
12. Karl Marx was a very famous bottom, actually.
Are you actually suggesting that Karl Marx had homosexual tendencies?
Well, Marx and Engels. I mean, we've all heard this couple.
Well, like, I don't know if they were tendencies, but he was, you know, certainly getting a lot of it, yeah.
I had no idea. So has this information been suppressed in the kind of standard educational...
Well, it's not something they talk about in you know, for instance, in the former Soviet Union, except informally at cocktail parties, but it was not part of the sort of official canon of the communist doctrine.
Interesting. Wow, well, we only have a few seconds left, and I would like to take those few seconds to remind you that this is WRCT Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon's oldest and finest radio station, and you have been listening to Sex Talk. I would like to thank Drs. Xylene and Mysterio for joining us in tonight's program. It has been, as always, enlightening and fascinating to have you here. So thank you, fabulous listeners, for joining us tonight. Thank you for all the calls. And until next week, this is DJ...
Extra Crispy.
DJ Extra Crispy 5000 signing off. Good night.